Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Before we go any further, I want to tell you all about the CJTR Look and Listen Lottery. You could win a complete audio-video makeover for your home with a grand prize of a 58-inch Panasonic 3D plasma TV with a home theater receiver, 3D Blu-ray player, complete sound surround sound speaker package, theater seating for three, stands for the TV and speakers, and installation in your home. You don't have to do that. Retail value of $10,040. Second prize is a 50-inch Panasonic plasma TV of a value of $1,100. The third prize is Monster Beats by Dr. Dre iPod Doc Boombox. Retail value of $550. All great prizes. And the draw date is Friday, June 17th at 5 p.m. Now, the tickets, you can get them from any programmer. You can come up to the office. They're just $20 each, and only 1,000 tickets will be sold. So you have a really great chance of winning. So for tickets, more information, you can go to our website at www.cjtr.ca. You can call the station during business hours, like now, at 525-7274. Or you can email us at lookandlistenlottery@cjtr.ca. And the complete rules and prize details are available as at our website I was telling you about, www.cjtr.ca. Our prizes are furnished by Radio Center Consumer Electronics. Thank you very much. And this is your opportunity to support Regina Community Radio. Get your tickets now for the Look and Listen Lottery. And now, with that out of the way, let's continue. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio. It's hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-hosts today, Sean Dunham and Mona Hill.
Sean, hi, everybody. Say hi, Sean.
Hi.
Sean is a graduating journalism student who will be taking the co-host reins today as we have conversation with Michaela Schultz. Welcome, Michaela.
Hi.
Michaela is the co-founder of the newly formed TransSask Support Services for transgender persons and their supporters. So having got all that out of the way, Sean, take it away. It's all yours.
Awesome. Thank you, Jim. I'm really excited to be on the show. Hi, Michaela. Nice to talk to you again.
Hi, Sean.
So Michaela Schultz, is a trans-identified trans woman from Regina, and has been active in advocating for the rights of the transgender community. And I just want to talk to you a bit about the TransSask support services that you are just the founder and director of. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Sure. I started the organization out of an identified need of support for the transgender community. I find a lot of trans-identified individuals are still in the closet because they aren't aware of what supports and resources are out there, although they are few and far in between, but there are some out there. Mm-hmm. So I started this to try to be a little more public, to get people aware of what resources are available.
Definitely. What is your vision? What do you hope to achieve through, the TransSask support services?
Well, establish that support network for trans-identified individuals, not just them, but people who support them, spouses, family members, children, parents, friends and allies, and every citizen of Saskatchewan who's interested in learning more about trans-identified individuals, the transgender community, and the issues that we face.
Yeah. I think I would assume that a lot of people in Regina would actually be sort of surprised that there is a trans community in Regina that they probably would actually have no idea about. Why do you think it's not as visible in Regina, or why people don't?
Well, like I just mentioned, there's a lot of trans-identified individuals who are in the closet, so to speak. They aren't visible in the public eye. I think that stems from our culture's ignorance of transgendered issues and those problems that we face in our everyday lives. There's this ideal in our culture that gender is a binary. You're either this or that. You're either a man or a woman. And to mix those two up in your gender expression or gender identity just is not acceptable in our culture. So a lot of people who are trans-identified are hidden from the rest of society. So I hope to alleviate some of that ignorance and make the world a little better place for those who identify as transgender.
To break the binary a bit.
Yes.
I guess that sort of brings me to the counseling or like help or healthcare services that you've received. Is this coming from a sort of personal experiences where you realized there wasn't any services for you?
Definitely, yeah. There's a serious lack of healthcare services for trans-identified folk. There's a lack in every sector of our culture. Again, that's just, you know, a result of the ignorance that exists. But specifically healthcare, you know, Saskatchewan lags so far behind other provinces in Canada in supporting the transgender community in health services. Initially, right off the bat, identifying issues of gender identity through counseling, maybe in high school counseling sessions or stuff like that. You know, high school counselors just don't have that knowledge about gender identity issues and how to address them. But even in the larger community, psychologists and psychiatrists, they don't receive the education that's needed to address those issues that are faced by transgender individuals.
Yeah. What do you think, how do you think that could be addressed? Like, you know, should workshops be put on, or are there even workshops for people like that to go through?
Certainly, education is the best. How to go about that, I'm still exploring that myself. Yeah. We'll figure it out in due time, but I suppose right at the basic level of schools, colleges, and universities, they could offer in their curriculum some education on the issues that are faced by transgender individuals. That includes to psychologists, psychiatrists, as well as nurses, physicians, social workers, business administration students even, you know, because you might be running a business where one of your employees identifies transgender, and how do you deal with that situation? So,
yeah,
like I said, every sector of our society needs to have some education about the issues.
Yeah. So Trans-SASC Support Services is, you know, one of the first services like this that I have heard of in Saskatchewan. And there seems to be a lot to do, like as you were just mentioning, in educating the public. How much help do you have in the Trans-SASC, like in your organization?
I initiated it just not this past Monday, but the Monday before. So it's like just brand new, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of feedback from hundreds of people saying how great of an idea this is and how long it's been needed. But as for physical laboring at it, it's just me right now. So I welcome anyone who wants to get involved to drop me a line and says, hey, I can help out here. So
yeah,
for sure.
Okay. How are you being funded with your organization?
That's another avenue I haven't explored yet. still looking at incorporating as a nonprofit organization. Mm-hmm. And then once we officially do that, then we can solicit for funding. And also looking at becoming a charitable organization, registering through Revenue Canada as a charitable organization. So that will offer us some additional funding as well. Because the organization is, like I said, just brand new, a lot of my focus has been on promoting and marketing the idea and just getting people yeah. aware that this concept is out there. So.
And obviously you are not getting paid for all this work that you're doing, so.
No.
Yeah. How was, I guess when, I kind of want to talk about your realization that you were a transgender.
Sure, yeah.
When did you start thinking that you might be transgendered?
That's a common question. Most transgender people respond, I've always known yeah. I was transgender, and that's the same with me. My earliest memories are of my own desire to be a girl, you know, mm-hmm. Back to when I was 4 or 5 years old. Just struggling with the interests that I had, you know, which would be stereotypically feminine or for girls.
Yeah.
And what was expected of me because I was being raised as a boy. You know, so that struggle's always been present in my life.
Okay. And then when did you sort of make your decision that you were tired of living as a man and wanted to live as a woman?
Be about 3 years ago.
Okay.
It was, I probably started really getting serious about 8 years ago. Started researching the topic, learning more about the term transgender and transsexual, and discovering more of myself, you know, to come to a point of self-actualization, you know, self-discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it like an aha moment? Like, this is...
Well, no, it kind of developed yeah. over the years because of my own ignorance, too, you know. I complain about our culture ignorant to the issues. Well, I was raised in this culture, yeah. too, so I as well was ignorant, so... I had to learn a lot about who I am according to the labels and definitions that are out there. So, that developed over the years. But I came out to friends and family probably beginning about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what is the process? Can you take me a bit into that? Like you said, the healthcare system is really lacking in understanding and counseling and things like that. Like, how do you go about that?
I'm still learning yeah. how, because of that lack there, you know. I'm familiar with a lot of gender clinics around the world and mm-hmm. the process that they go through, but those are already established protocols, yeah. you know, and we're still trying to establish that process here in Saskatchewan. Any transgender individual that contacts me, I advise them to first seek out counseling, either with a social worker or a psychologist. They need to establish a family doctor, and then from there they can get referrals to psychiatrists or internalists or internists, so that if they choose to, they can proceed with hormone therapy, and referrals to different surgeons for different procedures if they choose to do that. Mm-hmm. Of course, not all transgender individuals choose to transition.
Yeah.
They may just choose to express themselves in their clothing or makeup or in their mannerisms and expressions and stuff. There's only a small percentage of the transgender community who you would label as transsexual, who would transition from one gender to another. And even that term transsexual has its it has its divides too. You know, you have non-operative transsexuals who choose not to go through gender reassignment surgery, which is referred to as bottom surgery, either because personal preference or pre-existing medical conditions, or most of the times lack of financing to pay for the procedure. And then you have pre-operative transsexuals who would like to go through with the procedure, just haven't yet. And then you have your post-operative as well.
I know we're just talking about your lack of support medically, but did you find any sort of peer support in Regina?
That's one reason for initiating TransSask, is to build that peer support network. Because as I alluded to earlier, the transgender individuals are closeted about who they are. So to locate and identify other transgender people is really difficult. For me, being out in the public as transgender, I've been able to be in contact with several people. They'll see me in the street and they'll come up to me or whatever and say, "Oh, hey, you know, you know." So that way I've been able to establish some peer support network for myself and other transgender people. But now with TransSask, I hope to expand that province-wide through all of Saskatchewan. I've been in contact with transgender people from LaRonge, Prince Albert, North Battleford, Yorkton, Weyburn, Moose Jaw. We're all over the place.
Well, speaking of trans visibility, Transgender Day of Awareness or Visibility?
It's March 31st is International Transgender Day of Visibility. And it's a day for the transgender community, essentially just to stand out and say, hey, we're here. You know, recognize us, and you know, it's time we start addressing those issues that are faced by the transgender community.
Right, and this is a pretty new day, am I right?
This will only be the second annual International Transgender Day of Visibility, yes.
Okay.
Pre-existing, or in conjunction to that, is November 20th, which is a Transgender Day of Remembrance, which is a celebration, for a lack of better words, day of recognition for those who have succumbed to transphobia, transphobic violence, and stuff like that. So,
So the Day of Remembrance is for people that have suffered against the violence against trans people.
Right.
Has there been much violence in Regina, or like people that you know? Have you faced any?
There has, well, I myself have faced numerous occasions of verbal harassment, for one thing. Nothing that's really turned into physical violence, but there are examples that I can point to. Just last fall, there was a young man who was assaulted in a pizza restaurant in the city here. The reason behind why he states that he was assaulted was because he was wearing nail polish, and that would be a gender expression, right?
Yeah.
Because traditionally men don't wear nail polish. This individual did not identify as being gay, which his assailants accused him of being. He was not transgender. He was a straight male who just happened to be wearing nail polish that one night. Mm-hmm. So that would be an example of violence based on gender expression. Just, I'm kind of reluctant in mentioning this, but just this past week, there's rumors of an assault happening at Regina Correctional Center against a trans-identified individual. Details are sketchy at best, yeah. So I don't want to, you know, speculate on anything there. So
yeah, but it's okay.
So it does happen, and it's not always publicized neither, so we don't know about it.
When you were just talking about that example, you said the guys thought that he was like gay or something like that. Do you think there are those misconceptions about trans people that, you know, they're gay?
Definitely. Yeah. There's, it seems difficult to distinguish between one's sexuality and one's gender identity. Mm-hmm. And that's instilled upon us through popular media too. You know, movies depict feminine men as being gay and masculine women as being lesbians, but the way one expresses themselves really has nothing to do with one's sexual orientation.
Okay.
For sure.
I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess
I have some questions.
You have some, yeah, for sure.
Sure, Mona. I've got lots of announcements.
Hello,
too, today.
Mona. You've been quiet over
Hi,
there.
It's been fun to sit here quietly.
I had her mic turned down so she couldn't interrupt.
I have a question, and I'd like to actually get into this if you don't mind, the two of you, after the break.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of minutes till the break. But the one thing you talked earlier about when you came out and you started talking about it to family and friends. There's a number of gay people that I have as friends who have said to me, you know, when I came out, everybody I came out to said, yeah, we already knew.
Right.
You know, so I wondered if that was, in your case, that was a similarity.
Well, there's extremes to transgender individuals. There's, say, transgender men, they'll express themselves in different feminine ways, and it might be obvious, but you can't make that as the assumption that they're transgender just because of their expressions. But then to the other extreme, there's individuals like myself who experience, it's been termed hyper masculinity, where you take on a masculine lifestyle to mask who you are inside so that people don't discover your gender identity, your internalized gender identity. So you engage in a career that's traditionally masculine, and, you know, so.
Right on. Okay, I get it. Yeah. How much time, Jim?
Well, we have about 2 minutes, but I'd just like to mention that the government has fallen in Ottawa, and it looks like we're headed for an election. Just thought you'd like to know.
I was trying to watch that on my Twitter here, but I missed it.
Okay, well, thanks for explaining that.
Yes.
I want to get the two of you to get a little bit more into the emotional toll. I mean, hence the psychological aspect, and you talked about healthcare earlier.
Right.
For someone to have to take on a persona that is certainly not how they feel inside, how they feel psychologically, but in order to hide, I could see a very high need for some very serious counseling during that time, even, you
well,
know,
just
to help you figure out whether you want to come out or not.
And I even find the trans individuals that contact me and I talk to, they express extreme gratitude just to have someone to discuss this with, because it's something some people have held inside themselves for some people 60, 70 years.
Wow.
Yes,
yeah.
I have a trans woman who's 73 years old that I'm in communication with.
Wow.
And she's out to no one else but me.
Wow. That must be so difficult.
I couldn't imagine.
We're going to wrap things up for the break. We're going to have some commercials and some music. I think Jim's playing Jan Arden today.
Yep. Jan Arden's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll do the break here right now, and we'll come back with Michaela Schultz and Sean Dunham and Mona and myself, and we'll talk some more.
Life is
We're back on Human Rights Radio. This is Sean Dunham. I'm talking to Michaela Schultz. She is the founder and director of TransSASC Support Services, which is a province-wide organization offering support and resources for trans-identified individuals. And before the break, we were just talking about the trans process, and we talked a bit about the physical toll that it takes on a person. And I guess we're going to get back into our conversation. And what I guess we'd want to know about is, what is the psychological toll and, like, emotional toll that it would take on a child who would have these feelings and then would just keep them inside for so long? Like you were mentioning before, like a 70-some-year-old woman who is just talking to you now, and she identifies as a trans woman.
Right, right. While I can't say specifically the psychological effects, because I'm not a registered psychologist or psychiatrist or anything, but I can share with you my own personal experiences and opinion. It's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult. You struggle it every moment of every day. You know, for me, personally, you know, you're always conscious about your actions, your mannerisms, and whether they'll be portrayed as being feminine or not. I have a real habit of crossing my legs in a
as do
in,
I apparently
in a
we're
feminine
all sitting here with our legs crossed.
in well, men do too, but men and women cross their legs differently. And mm-hmm. you know, when I'm in a comfortable situation, I'll just kind of sit back and cross my legs, and then I would always catch myself, and it's like, oh no, you know, guys aren't supposed to sit like that, you know, just slouch down and spread your legs, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always there, you know. It's constantly being aware of you're conforming to expectations of society. So
yeah.
Sorry, some quiet talk there. I don't. Yeah, it starts from an early age too. You know, psychologists know that an individual's gender identity starts to show itself at the age of 2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, children are starting to lean towards more masculine play or more feminine play and interests and mannerisms and stuff like that by the age of 2 or 3. So, of course, it would exist that transgender children would also start experiencing that gender identity at that stage too.
Mm-hmm.
There's in popular media, there's children 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old that have been the focus of news stories identifying as transgender, and whether their parents accept this or not. And, you know, there's more and more stories coming out all the time.
Wasn't there a story about a child whose parents were supportive? An elementary school child.
Right.
Who were very supportive and allowed the child to dress and spend his or her day, I can't remember if it was male or female, and physically, but the school had problems with it.
Right, yeah.
It seems to me I remember hearing something like that.
The funny thing is, the other children, their peers, have, you know, little Billy is going to be a girl from now on. Oh, okay, no problem, you know. Who has the problem is the parents, the administration of those schools. They can't understand or accept this idea of identifying as a gender not congruent to your birth sex, you know. And well, again, you know, that just points to the ignorance in our culture of gender in general. You know, getting away from that binary, you're either one or the other, and genitals does not determine one's gender identity. You know, mm-hmm. just because a boy was born with a P penis, you know, he's not going to necessarily grow up identifying as a man, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a concept a lot of people have trouble understanding.
Right. You know, there's, I might get this wrong, but I believe Anne Lawrence, she has a website, and she is attempting to predict the prevalence of transgenderism in the general population. And she suggests that as many as 1 in 200 people may identify as transgender. As many as 1 in 20 people will question their gender identity at some point in their lives.
Do you think that's that number has been around forever, or do you think like it's been changing in the last?
It's been around since the beginning of mankind. You know, yeah. This is who we are. This is human nature, right? The awareness of those numbers are only coming to light now, mm-hmm. because we are only now researching and studying and trying to understand the topic of transgenderism and transgender individuals. So as we slowly come to learn more, we will know more. That almost seems like a redundant statement. So, yeah.
So transgendered children, you know, this is another example, a little weirder than Mona's, but like Angelina and Brad have their child who, like a girl who has been photographed dressed like in pants and short cropped hair, and it's like all over a lot of news magazines, and people are really getting angry about their parenting skills, and it's just like, I don't know, it's really interesting that you know, a parent that would let their child do, you know, they pick what they want to wear that day or how they want to wear their hair, and then it's a bad parent.
Well, that seems to be the response of, like Mona mentioned earlier, the parents who are accepting of their transgender child. There's a lot of backlash of people questioning their parenting skills. I remember seeing this one session on some talk show where the audience questioned the parent about, you know, the reason why she's letting her boy live as a girl is because she secretly wanted a daughter, right? You know, and it's not that at all, you know. It's the child, the individual's own sense of identity, what interests they have, and it's only our own ideals that define them as being, as presenting themselves as masculine or feminine. You know, who told us that pink is associated with girls and blue is associated with boys?
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know, it's that pressure we face in our society, not just transgender individuals, but every individual, to conform to this model, this ideal of the perfect man and the perfect woman. And, yeah, you know, this, it extends to every listener out there.
Okay. I guess changing gears a little bit, we obviously just heard a couple minutes ago that the government has fallen. And I'm just wondering, Bill C-389, which is a bill to protect trans people by amending the Human Rights Act, it passed its third reading by a pretty slim margin in the House of Commons. And now a lot of people fear that it'll probably be defeated in Senate. How do you think that it's going to... do you think anything will happen with it, or
honestly, I'm feeling like I'm gonna cry right now. It's not gonna be defeated in the Senate because it's no longer in the Senate. It's dead. The bill is dead because an election has been called.
Could you tell us a little bit about what's
in
the
bill?
Yeah,
I was just thinking that. A little background on Bill C-389 was proposal to amend the Human Rights Code as well as the Criminal Code of Canada to include the terms gender identity and gender expression as a base of discrimination, as a basis mm-hmm. for discrimination.
And it would be considered a hate crime, right?
Right. Okay. Well, like that example of that guy with the painted fingernails I gave earlier, you know, that would fall under that.
Okay.
You know, it would have been a hate crime because of his gender expression. But, you know, that law, if it was passed into law, would, you know, extend to include a lot of situations, housing, for instance, a landlord, you know, I don't want to give anyone some ammo here on how to interact with transgender people, but landlords can refuse to rent homes because of a person's gender expression. Employers can refuse employment because of a person's gender expression or gender identity. Healthcare workers can refuse healthcare services based on a person's gender expression or gender identity. That's what Bill C-389 did, mm-hmm. was going to eliminate that discrimination which exists in our society.
How do you feel, I know we were talking about this earlier and you referred to it as the bathroom bill, how do you feel about something that its intention is to give you basic human rights and then is being sort of referred to as a bathroom bill? Like, what is that even in reference to?
Well, that's not my term.
No.
That's the term of those opposing the bill. Their argument, just to give some background on their side, their argument is that this bill will allow, and these are their words paraphrased, mm-hmm. cross-dressing men to enter women's washrooms and potentially harm our children.
So that's
a fear-mongering tactic, one that's existed all throughout history. We look back to when the gay and lesbian community were fighting for their rights, you know, that's a fear tactic that was used against them. You know, gay men are pedophiles and, you know, same thing like that. So, you know.
That was a big issue years ago when it came to teaching children in school.
Right, and that's another argument. Right. Actually, I just read an article yesterday written by a prospective candidate for the presidency who said that having transgendered teachers would confuse our children and, you know, cause all kinds of problems and stuff like that, right? So it's a lot of fear-mongering and misinformation and misperceptions about transgender individuals and trying to suppress our basic human rights,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Did I answer
your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the Saskatchewan's budget was released yesterday, and I was just wondering what is its effect on the trans community?
My concern is that it won't have an effect on the transgender community.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is nearly half the budget, $250-260 million, is being set aside for healthcare services, but nowhere in there is a transgender community mentioned as a recipient of this $260 million.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there exists a desperate lack of healthcare services for the transgender community. You know, their rates of suicide are as much as 1,000 times higher than the Canadian average from statistics that I've read. Drug and alcohol use, rates of depression, just everything, you know, everything that plagues our society is higher within the transgender community. Of that's being addressed.
And, you know, I'm thinking about your new support group, TransSouth Support Group.
Right.
What about a connection to the university and the psychology department and the social work department? And,
right.
You know, and the opportunity to come in and speak and perhaps advocate for a class that people can take.
Well,
is
definitely.
That something that your group might want
to
do?
We're more than willing to, you know, provide those educational opportunities, come in, do a workshop, you know, a Q&A session or just a round table, you know, just have a few people sit around the table and discuss the issues like we are here today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, for sure.
Just for a moment here, I just like to ask you if you have any concerns about Bill 160. Does that affect the transgender and trans...
Bill 160 has something to do with...
The Human Rights Commission, the way...
Oh, the Saskatchewan Human Rights. I've lost following that bill with all these other issues that have arisen recently.
Essentially, taking away the Human Rights Tribunal would definitely affect someone wanting to take their own case, maybe of discrimination, to the Human Rights Commission, and they've changed from the opportunity from doing it up to 2 years to 1 year. They want this to go to 1 year. So this is a concern for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. There's many issues within that bill that would affect the transgender community, of course, specifically, but would affect all Saskatchewan citizens if it were to come into effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I couldn't comment on any specific details though, because I lack knowledge in that.
Okay. So I guess if anyone was wanting to volunteer or to get in contact with TransSask Support Services, how would they go about doing that? And what are you looking for in a volunteer?
Well, what we're looking for in a volunteer is... I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah.
Because I've done it all myself here so far. But essentially, I'm in the phase, like I said earlier, of promoting and gathering... resources, organizations, businesses, individuals, professionals who are supportive of the transgender community. We'd like to put together a directory, make that available so trans-identified individuals know who and where they can go to for support, stuff like that. So I suppose what I'm looking for volunteer is people to engage the community, try to search out these resources so that we can collate them into a single document and make them available.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
would a person have to be transgender to be a part of
your
organization?
Oh, definitely not, Mona. You know, anyone can be a supporter of the transgender community. Of course, definitely. Also looking to establish local representatives in various areas of Saskatchewan so that there's a contact person who may be closer to someone that they can communicate with. Because this is brand new, I'm looking for people who are knowledgeable and interested in structuring the organization as a nonprofit organization too, so I have some experience and some knowledge in that, but not a lot. There's all kinds of things to get involved with. There's lots of ideas that are coming out, things we want to pursue, educational campaigns and you know, all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
How do you find us?
Yeah.
We got a website up, www.transask.org.
How do you spell Transask?
I was just, you beat
me
to it.
Has it got two S's or one?
It's trans, T-R-A-N-S, Sask, S-A-S-K. It's one word, and yes, there would be two S's in the middle there. Yeah. There's all kinds of it's only one page, but there's all kinds of information on how to connect with us. Through our email, we have presence on Facebook, Twitter, we also have a Blogger account, YouTube account, you know, all over the place, you know, just trying to get visible.
Perfect. Do you have some announcements, Mona?
I do have some announcements, yeah.
Okay.
Before we say goodbye,
yeah.
I do. Okay, let's get to our announcements. The first big one is on April 19th. Our Amnesty Regina group is holding a fundraising steak night. We had a very successful one last year, and we're at it again. It'll be at Bushwhacker Brew Pub from 5:30 to 8:30. That's on Dewney Avenue. There are vegetarian meals. There are chicken meals available. And we're also going to have... Oh, and that includes, I think, some beer, doesn't it, Jim? Since it's a brew pub.
Yes.
That meal. Right. And we're also going to have a silent auction like we did last year. We had some really interesting items donated. And it helped out with our fundraising. And if you're wondering what we do with our money, we use it send to Ottawa. We send a portion of it every year to Ottawa. We also use it for educational materials and working with the public to inform them about human rights. You can call Jim about tickets at 535-6928, and the tickets are $25 each. Now, here's something else interesting I thought you'd like to know about. This coming Tuesday, March 29th at 7 p.m., there's going to be a debate, a public debate titled Open Minds Debating Public Issues, Who Governs Native Canada? A debate on the concept of Native self-government at the Regina Public Library Theater at Central Library downtown. Dr. Joyce Green, political science professor from the university, Chief Guy Lonechild of SIN, Dr. Dwight Newman, the School of Law at the university, will all be there as a panel. And the issue of Aboriginal self-government has occupied a large place in public discussion in Canada for decades. Ideas about the Constitution, international law, and traditional forms of Aboriginal government all play a role in this important debate. There will be an evening of spirited dialogue as university professors and members of the community discuss this hot topic. So there will be a forum, and they want people to come out and listen to the debate, and they want to hear our views. So we're all welcome to come out and share our thoughts. And the last one I have is Tuesday, March 29th, the same night. So you can get a choice here between 7 and 8:30 p.m. The Shumiacher Theatre in the Mackenzie Art Gallery will be showing Wind Power, Myths and Realities. Join Tim Weiss, Director of Renewable Energy and Efficiency, with the Pembina Institute as he discusses the latest in wind power technology, an important resource for greening our provincial grid. And the cost of nuclear and solar energy will also be discussed, and there will be a Q&A to follow. And we have 1 minute to say goodbye.
Perfect.
Goodbye.
Go ahead.
Well,
wrap it up, Sean.
Thank you for having me on Human Rights Radio. It was really great. And thank you, Michaela, for coming on and being here with me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you to Mona and Jim for having me again. It's I enjoy this time to talk to you guys.
Been a pleasure for us to have you two here as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. And now we're going to close up this week's Human Rights Radio. We hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights. We're volunteers with Amnesty International, and our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."